Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening from wherever you may be listening or watching us. And welcome to another great episode of Coaching Outdoor Podcast. We are, both Anna Marie and myself, are really excited to welcome today Lindsay Cray, mental health counsellor. And I'm going to let Lindsay tell us all about herself, but we're going over to Rochester in New York, sort of near Lake Ontario. I think I've got that right.
Yes.
And Lindsay, I wonder if you would mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, just a brief summary, and then we'll carry on the conversation.
Sure. Thank you for the introduction. And yes, right near Lake Ontario, actually. Rochester sits right on Lake Ontario. So excellent geography there. So I guess I would classify myself in maybe three categories. I'm a mental health counselor primarily. I'm also an outdoor field guide, and I'm a clinical consultant for nature-based therapy. I focus most of my career on, I guess, how would I describe it best? Developing and delivering progressive style nature-based practices to help individuals, professionals, and organizations engage in nature immersion and the power of nature in supporting emotional health and wellness all around, right? So I guess, is that what you were looking for, Paul?
Absolutely. That's a great, that's such a, as I say, great cross-section of the work you do. It's amazing. And we're going to get into that in a minute. So we'll let, brilliant.
And it's very much, as soon as you heard, you know, as a coach, sometimes you hear the words like mental health and therapy. Yeah. It's like, ooh, okay. So as a coach, how am I in relation to this? Yeah.
How do I navigate that? Sure.
Gets a little bit gray sometimes. So yeah, look forward to exploring those areas in a bit. But before we dive in, a question we ask all of our guests as a bit of a warm-up starting point. And there's two parts. So first part is, what is your earliest memory of being outdoors? Mm. And then, what do you enjoy about being outdoors so much?
Okay. Earliest memory of being outdoors. So there, obviously, well, let's see. There's two memories, but they're about the same time. So one of them would be when I was very, very young. For my birthday, I remember my godfather coming over to our house, and he and my father having a linden tree delivered to the house and planted in our front yard, and kind of like, I don't know, in celebration of whatever birthday that was. I couldn't tell you how old I was, but I know I was very young, very, very young. And if, for those of you who don't know what a linden tree is, it's also known as a basswood tree. Linden trees just tend to be the more suburban style version of that tree. Basswoods grow like in the forest. Linden trees are like the cousin of a basswood, and they're meant for like landscape planting and stuff like that. So my father and my godfather planted a linden tree in the front yard in celebration of my birthday. And I remember standing out there kind of watching and wondering exactly what was happening here and how deep the hole was and what this tree was going to, you know, turn into. So for like the first 18 years of my life, that tree and I spent every day together. A second memory around the same time, which I just want to throw out there because this is my favorite earliest memory, is going on my first camping and fishing trip with my father and a good friend of his, and him trying to teach me how to fish and connecting the hook and the lure to the fishing line and standing on the boat. My father's friend was behind me and my dad was standing next to me, and he was trying to show me how to cast. And just like you'd see in a cartoon, I flipped the rod backwards to cast and pulled it forward. And in pulling it forward, that hook got caught on my dad's friend's sweatpants on the back side of him. And we just heard a huge, and a bunch of expletives come out after that. But that is it is not from a movie. That is a true story. I have that experience. There's a photo to back it up. That poor man took one in the behind for me. And still made my fishing experience that day memorable.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I have to ask about the tree.
Yeah.
How is the tree now?
I don't live in that house anymore, but it's still standing, and it's big and beautiful. One of the things I love about linden trees, or basswood, they're both in the same kind of species, is that they grow like they're like sentinels. They grow really tall, and really straight. They're one of like the straightest growing trees in the forest, and so when you're walking through a forest, you can almost always point them out because of how just very like straight, like symmetrical they grow. And this particular linden tree is not as tall as one that would grow in the forest because it didn't have that same kind of competition. But it is there, and I do remember every year when it blossomed, the smell in the front yard was absolutely heavenly. It was like, I'm surprised they haven't figured out how to make a perfume out of that. It's just, it stops you in your tracks. It's so amazing. But I miss that. I miss having that in my front yard. Yeah.
Gorgeous. It just seems such a beautiful way to signify and celebrate you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our relationship and connection to trees is something which is incredibly inherent and natural, though often forgotten. And yeah, we had a former guest who. He wrote a book about his connection to an oak tree.
Yes.
And visited it every day. So yeah, that's an interesting episode. And anyway, part two. So part two, can't forget, what do you enjoy about being outside so much?
I think it's what don't I enjoy, that my life revolves around being outside. So that would be like saying, what do you enjoy about food so much? Like, I enjoy everything about it because it is the space in which I feel most connected to life, right? Everything outside is alive. I mean, everything indoors at one point came from something living, I suppose, too. But it is a constant reminder that I am a living being and that needs connection with other living beings. I need to feel the rain and the sun and the wind. I need to hear birds. I need to appreciate trees. I need to hear the sound of a leaf as it blows across the, the front lawn, or a child playing in the street, in front of mine. It reminds me that there's more to life than just work and computer and screens and the grind, that's what I'm meant to be here for, is to live as a creature of the world rather than to work like a cog in a machine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's amazing, Lindsay. That's so good. And just to finish up is I love all that connection. That I love that something landed with me was you said that tree and I grew up together. It's kind of like you're connected, and you are connected. You've grown up together in your different species and stuff. And I love the fact it's still there and you go back and see it. And we talk a lot, as Anna Marie said, about the straightness of the tree. We sometimes get people to pick out a tree that they connect to or they feel, and it's that straightness. And I love the fact you even brought in the system around, but that tree hasn't had the competition that the other trees have had. So there's that whole system thing playing on out there, that that linden tree's thinking, oh, I've got a bit of space. I'm not competing. So it's lovely the work, the bringing in, and I so get the connection of life, and you're not a cog, and that's lovely. So we're going to move to tracing your line through your career. I wonder if you could just take us through this line that takes us back from those early memories, and kind of then getting growing up and entering into the bigger world, and that career path that almost gets us to where we are now. And just could you share on what motivated you to move through that career path?
That's a It's a long and complicated, but kind of like beautiful journey, I think. And it really all stems from the immediate love of nature. You know, literally from the time I came into this world, it was a thing. Most of that was a result of my parents pushing me to be outside and my father's willingness to kind of like, you know, bring me outside and you know, like kind of help me become accustomed to getting dirty and exploring and, you know, wasn't afraid of anything kind of thing. Like if I did want to go, if I wanted to paint my nails, I would go outside and sit on the front step with bare feet and like hand the nail polish to my dad, and my dad would paint my nails like outside kind of thing. So I was, there's hundreds of pictures of me sitting in trees or covered in dirt. And so that's always kind of been a thing for me. And I think because I grew up in the 80s, and I don't know about there in the UK, but here in the States, in the 80s, it was still okay to let your child go outside unsupervised. So my parents would essentially be like, outside until you hear the dinner bell. Like if you're not at school or doing homework or chores, go outside until you hear the dinner bell, right? It was just, it was part of the schedule that I would not be indoors wasting my time. And when like Nintendo came out and Sega came out, I got one later than everybody else, and I was told that I could only have an hour a day on it, and that's if I did my homework. So my parents were really cautious and like conscious of making sure that I spent time outside. That's in the positive side of things. The other side of it, and I think this will help to understand how it ties in with the later part of my career, is that my father suffered from PTSD. He served in Vietnam. He did two tours, and it was horrendous. You know, it's combat, and combat does really terrible things to the human psyche. And so my father came home with PTSD, and in a lot of ways, my mother and I were collateral damage to that. So I think part of my father's love of being outdoors is because it was one of the only places where he felt truly safe. And somehow that managed to rub off onto me. And when things got uncomfortable in the house, I would go to the forest. I would run to the forest. And you might be picturing like, you know, a cabin in the woods, but I lived in a suburban neighborhood that was bordered on one side by a busy thoroughfare called Empire Boulevard, and on the other side by a major highway, 590. And so there was only a sliver of woods that was available from where I was. But I would, you know, hop the fence in the backyard, and I would run down to the end of the street behind us, which was the last street before the highway. And I would kind of dip into this thin tract of woods that ran between the highway and the neighborhood and take it all the way down until it hit the Irondequoit Bay. And if you look at a map, you can see where the Irondequoit Bay is in conjunction to Lake Ontario, but it's right there. Like my backyard is essentially Lake Ontario. So I spent a lot of time by the woods and the water for a variety of reasons. But I think that is what sparked my deep connection with nature and my deep understanding about how healing nature as a space and place can be for, you know, minds of children and adolescents and adults. So naturally, I went to school for environmental conservation. I went to the College of Environmental Science and Forestry. It was at Syracuse, SUNY College. And I got a degree there in environmental studies, my undergraduate degree. I remember that in high school, there was like a college fair, and the woman at the college fair, when I sat down with her, was like, "Oh, what do you want to do when you grow up?" And I looked at her with a very straight face, and I said, "I want to save the world." And she laughed, and then she looked at me, and she's like, "Oh, she's not joking." And I was like, "No, I really like, I'm not kidding. Like, I want to, like, there's a problem, and it needs to be fixed, and nobody's paying attention to it." So. Anyway, she suggested ESF, and that's where I went for undergrad. And then after that, I thought I really wanted to spend some time working in the tropics. So I spent some time in Panama and Central America, and I lived 6 years in Puerto Rico. And I did a lot of research science between, oh no, I take it back. I'm sorry. 3 years in Puerto Rico. I received an invitation to go back to a fully paid fellowship through the National Science Foundation to go back to school to get my master's degree. And the trade-off for that was that I would become a teacher in a course called the Global Environment for high school juniors and seniors. So I took the offer and I did that, all while also living in Puerto Rico for an additional 3 years. So that's 6 years total between, on undergrad and receiving my master's. And then when I finished that, my husband and I decided that we wanted to take jobs together at the same nonprofit agency in California. So I was a research scientist for a long time. I was an educator for a while there as well. And then I went out to California and I worked as the education director for a nonprofit agency. And we stayed there for about a year. Things didn't work out there because there was issues with leadership. So we left there, Nick and I both did, and then decided that we wanted to start our own nonprofit organization in expeditionary learning because both him and I had had such an incredible experience with that at the nonprofit agency that we've thought, you know what, we can do this. So we moved back to Rochester, and we started our own nonprofit called the Earthworks Institute. And that ran for almost 6 years. Very successfully. It still exists. It's a program that exists within a youth-based program here in Rochester. But we were the first forest school in our area. So we founded the first forest school through the Earthworks Institute. And then we took that same curriculum that I taught in the global environment, and I became an adjunct professor for that college, for the College of Environmental Science and Forestry. And I started teaching that in high schools to high school juniors and seniors. And basically, we're teaching them like high level environmental science. And then we did that. There was the forest school, and then we also taught, outdoor and wilderness survival skills. So, what I haven't mentioned is somewhere peppered in here, and I don't want to take too much time on this, is there was about a 7 year span where I became involved with an organization in Ithaca as a staff person, and then picked up on and continued to learn traits in wilderness survival. So I basically brought that as a toolkit for education in my pocket between moving to California and then moving back to Rochester. There was a short stint there where we lived in Ithaca. I picked that up and then brought that with me and continued to learn it and practice it. So anyway, Earthworks had these three facets: this wilderness survival stuff, this forest school stuff, and this high school education, where I'm teaching a college level course in expeditionary learning and the global environment to high school juniors and seniors. And that was my bag. I enjoyed that for a long time. And then my father got ill, and he wound up with glioblastoma, which is an extremely aggressive brain cancer. And eventually, it was recognized that that was service connected, meaning it was a result of his being exposed to Agent Orange while he was in Vietnam. And over the course of a year in 2017, it took his life. So I gave up, Nick and I gave up Earthworks to spend that year taking care of him. And in that year, I learned a lot about myself and what forgiveness looked like. And I learned about a lot about him and his history and what it meant to be a veteran. And that kind of changed the course of everything. And I decided at that point that I wanted to take this gift that I had for education and my interest in nature, and I wanted to turn it into something that was healing, so for mental health. And a year and a half later or so, COVID showed up. And I jumped on that opportunity because everything got shut down. But I jumped on that opportunity to go back to school and get my second master's degree. But this time I got it in mental health counseling. And I created a nature-based therapy program that is not wilderness therapy. A lot of people think nature-based therapy and they imagine like leaving and going into the back country for months at a time or weeks at a time. This is more of a localized nature-based therapy, meaning that anybody could practice it. You can do it as individuals or as a group. I created a program for that, and eventually that program turned into an independent organization, and we ran that with some temporary government funding, and it ran extremely successfully. And I'm talking like on average, about 80% of our clients reported statistically significant differences in their mindfulness and their PTSD symptoms. So we were the nutshell version of this is we were significantly reducing symptoms of PTSD and suicidality, and in the same level. So as those were going down, what was happening is there was an increase, an equal increase in mindful awareness, responsibility taking, emotional IQ, all of those things. And we had an epidemiologist follow that work, and put together a very thorough but extremely scientifically dry report of that work. And I kind of have it as my testament to how important it is to connect the concept of mental health and healing with the whole self, right? And you can't be whole unless you are connected with this full life force experience, which is the being outside. And so that's kind of what I do today. I am a mental health counselor. I work with clients individually. In fact, right before this, I was outside for a whole hour with a client walking around a park talking about like acceptance of self and just being with oneself, right? And what that means. And then I also do consulting. So I teach people, like I said, individuals, organizations, how to do this practice, whether you are an outdoor leader, a coach, another mental health practitioner of some kind, somebody who doesn't yet have one of those two designations or licenses, but is still working in like the human services field. Anybody that's interested in learning how to integrate this work, this natural work, into the practice of helping people heal and grow. My work as a consultant is teaching them how to do that. So that's where we are today.
Wow. Thank you for that overview of where you are at this moment in time. And, very much our audience are coaches or individuals who are on their path to become a coach or are contemplating. And, as a consultant within this space, if you're willing for us to pick your brains within this area a little bit. And okay, so what would your top advice to a coach be, or someone who is interested within this area?
Yeah. So when you think about coaching, right? As a coach, I'm a mental health counselor, not a coach. Let me just put that disclaimer out there. But I can imagine that one of the key things in training coaches is to help the coach themselves understand what drives a person. What is it that helps them find their center to the point where they are solid enough in themselves that they can help guide other people through that transformation, that metamorphosis. I myself have had leadership coaching. So like I have worked with a leadership coach, and she's incredible. And I'm going to do a big shout out to Rabia Shafi. This woman has some level of skill. I mean, she coaches people at the Pentagon, so I feel like I got really lucky. She's amazing. And one of the things that I learned from her is understanding how to befriend both your strengths and your challenges, your zones of non-self-acceptance. Like, where is it that you feel? And I'm purposely avoiding the word weaknesses because I don't feel like it's helpful to use that word. It's what are the parts of yourself that you don't accept? How do you find those pieces of acceptance, and for where mental health and leadership coaching come hand in hand is, you know, this concept of acceptance, about just allowing yourself to be sitting with that, understanding all the different facets of who you are, because you can't push those out, right? Like, they're a part of you. The longer you ignore them, the more they will weigh heavily on your psyche. You're trying to pretend or mask a part of yourself that is there, but you can't run from it because it's you. And if I were to tie that into nature, for example, you know, a tree is a tree. It can freeze, it can catch a disease, it can be in a windstorm, it can go through a drought, but it still has to continue to exist, right? Like, it's either going to give up or it's going to persist, one or the other. So you as a person can go through all these difficult periods of your life, but the way that you navigate those things is to understand both your strengths and your growing edges and utilize those and accept those to come into your full existence of self. That's where the best leaders come from, right? Like, learning how to be humble, learning to say, okay, I could use some feedback on this, learning how to say, all right, I'm gonna, you know, I want your feedback, and I would like to see, you know, where we can take this. If it's not in the direction that I want it to go, where can we take this? Learning how to be diplomatic. People only follow a good leader if that person is able to communicate their perspective in a way that doesn't feel like they're bulldozing. I once had somebody say to me that a leader can begin to look like the enemy if they get too far out in front of their pack for the pack to recognize them any longer. So what is your winter? What is your drought? What is your, you know, moment of disease? Like, what are the things that are your challenges? How do you learn how to befriend that so that you can continue to exist and be, despite all of that, you know? Yeah.
That's fantastic. That's really good. I mean, look, I mean, there's so much, and I think many of our listeners will have loved that piece. I mean, there's lots of challenges in there, things for us to go away and think about. You've already got me thinking about some of those things that I need. What is my winter? Kind of, you know, what do I need to accept? And it's you're right. We're guides. We're out there, and we're helping people to connect. And you're absolutely right, Lindsay. We need to understand ourselves and our as a tool and what it is we need to do. I wonder if you could just unpack and open up for us as well. You and I, we've had the opportunity, and I've learned from you around some of the stuff around the veteran program, and I just love the way that you take them through this program of the. And I wonder if you could just unpack that. And I don't want to say too much more because I want you to. But around how you kind of take them through this program of going out and the wood, and then the camp, and then they build that. Could you just explain and talk about that a bit for our listeners? Because I think it's lovely the way you do that with them.
Surely. And I also want to put it out there that this work has been done with veterans, because we were assessing for impacts on trauma, suicidality, anxiety, depression, right? But there's a lot of other populations out there that all deal with those same things, right? My heart is with veterans because of my history, and it's a population that I know. And for a lot of people, it's a difficult population, but it's one that I love. So that's where I decided to focus my energy initially when we developed this. But it can be applied with just about anybody. So, having put that disclaimer on it, what this might look like for a clinical group, or any kind of group, you know, there's an adjustment on how you design it based on whether or not you have clinical licensure. But I'm sure as I describe this, you could imagine yourself maybe leading something similar. So we bring the group out into the field, like, let's say on day one in the field. And actually, let me backtrack. First, it's important to make sure that that group has a chance to meet each other before they walk out into the woods. So we have a kind of like a baseline session to describe our definition of trauma, what nature-based therapy is, how I would define nature-based therapy as a treatment for trauma. Again, defining the self, how the person and the human psyche adapt to trauma, and how they adapt to healing outside in nature. There's also an opportunity for, any clients to ask questions, to get a chance to meet one another, to learn who I am, if I'm the leader. Optimally, a group program would be led by like two leaders, if you're clinical, two clinicians, right? And so you get a chance to meet the clinicians and ask any questions. And also, really important to set group norms. So if you're working with a group, to set group norms. No cell phones. We try to avoid conversation about like, religion, politics, the things that are real triggers, that kind of thing. And then it's okay if you want to get up and go take a walk, as long as you're letting somebody know where you went. If you want to get up and smoke a cigarette, that's fine too. Just like separate yourself, you're outdoors. So if that's your thing, that's your thing. So those are all the group norms. On the first day in the field, we would go out into the woods, and granted that woods would be a dedicated space, and it would have to be a space either that's private or isolated and where fires are allowed, because I'll tell you right now, you cannot run this program unless you are by a fire. Like, you need to be by a fire. The fire is the heart and soul of the program. And it's a way to do community building and development and track progress throughout the entire 3 months that the program would run. So you got to be able to have that. But we would go out, we would find a space in the woods together as a group where the entire group is able to decide through a democratic process which space feels good for them. And they figure that out, and we would optimally have them take responsibility for making that space theirs. So seating, creating a fire circle, we're going to talk about leave no trace ethics, right? We want to make sure that we're paying attention to if that space is like on a hill, or if there's any like branches hanging overhead that could be dangerous, or exposure, any of that other kind of stuff, poison ivy, yada yada. And this is where having the outdoor background is really important, because you're always assessing for safety, always. Weather conditions, change in weather, group safety, group dynamic, all of that. So once that whole circle, that base camp, if you will, that hearth has been established, then the next step would be, and this is just on day one, we're going to actually go through teaching that group how to build a fire. And that group is going to do it in unison with one another. This is your initial team building day on week one. And the theme of week one optimally should be something like mindfulness, because the whole theme of what you're doing out there is like being mindful of yourself in that place and space, being mindful of the group, how you're interacting with the group, that kind of thing. And then one of the things, and I'm not giving away all my secrets here, but one of the things that I love to do with this group, on day one, kind of towards the end, is to sit around that fire that they've built together in that hearth or base camp that they have built together, and discuss how the human spirit, how the thing that makes you tick, that keeps you alive, that keeps the, energy running through your body, how that is very much akin to the fire. And I will draw comparisons between how we brought the fire into the world. It took, care and consideration and compassion. It took feeding it, so acquiring food, giving it oxygen, making that space safe for it to come into the world. And then we talk about what it means to tend it. So to tend a fire, if you don't pay attention to it, and you don't stoke it at all, you don't give it any fuel, then the embers are going to get smaller and smaller, and eventually just kind of go out, right? But if you put too much on it all at once, too much fuel, it can get really big and really like almost out of control, and risk burning the proverbial house down, if you will. And that's, again, the same thing that we need to think about in terms of self-care. Like, How did you come into this world? How is that affecting you? And how are you currently treating yourself, right? Like, are you tending your fire in a way that's healthy and sustainable? Are you trying to add too much to it and it feels really big and out of control all the time? Or are you not paying attention to it at all and it's just getting smaller and smaller, to the point where it's almost barely in existence? And that in and of itself is kind of like the theme for how we carry this program forward for the next 3 months or so. And I optimally we're meeting once a week. I would love to be out there twice a week if possible, but once a week for about 3 hours, because that's the amount of time it takes to get out there, mentally settle in, establish yourself, run through an activity, process all that happens in the activity together as a group, and then clean up, and walk back out of the woods again. That's about 3 hours.
Yeah,
I
fantastic.
am loving the fire. I don't know whether it's something to do with it's like in the northern hemisphere, it's winter at the moment. Fire has a definite kind of attraction to it. And it's such a powerful connector. And from your descriptions and bringing everyone together, I'm really reminded of another episode that we did with Joe Thomas, who talks about the Mankind Project, which is a group that brings men together every 2 weeks, and their group meets outdoors around a fire. And that's where they
Ooh.
have the conversations and do kind of shadow and parts work.
Yes.
So it is the fire that is that key place. And I was literally just having a coach supervision session earlier today, and fire was mentioned. So I'm loving the synchronicities that are going on here. And actually
Yes.
that different type of fire that can be within us, and how the fire, it is a labor of love to tend to the fire. And at times it roars and it crackles and it burns, and then at other times it kind of beds in. You've got the embers, which is where the real heat is, the real warmth. And just hearing how it is central to your work. And thank you for your generosity in going into the details there. I know that for our listeners, just having an insight into
Into
the
the structure.
structure will bring them a lot. And I think there's a kind of
Sure.
some really interesting kind of practicalities that you ran through as well, particularly working with groups. Like, what are the norms? How you kind of set the stage to that, which is so important.
Yeah.
And there's also this piece around clientele, which I know for coaches who are kind of coming into the space, like, well, who do I want to work with? Like, who is my ideal client, inverted commas, even, is there one? And for you being naturally drawn to working with veterans, due to your kind of previous experience. And just taking a step further and having like an insight, and this is totally confidentiality respected. It would just be interesting to have maybe an insight into what you've observed in some clients, maybe some kind of client success stories or change that you've noticed, and confidentiality of course
Sure. Yeah.
respected.
There's one client who he's told his story publicly over and over again. And actually, for a while, he went from being a participant. He went through the program twice, and then the improvement was so drastic that he actually went and got his New York State peer mentorship certification, and then came back and worked side by side with me as a peer mentor for over a year. Seeing through multiple groups afterwards, which was really helpful considering, like, he had a story similar to the other veterans that were in the group. And to see him come out the other side of it and now be sitting next to me as a peer mentor, helping other veterans go through this group was it. I cannot say enough about how powerful that was and how it lent to the credibility of the program with other veterans who were incoming, because the veteran community tends to be very small, tight-knit, not very trusting of. Like shrinks and doctors and stuff like that for good reason, for good reason. So the credibility really helped to have him there. His name is Jason Gibson, and he's, I cannot say enough about this man. Him and I are still very close, and he runs his own coaching program now on his own. But his story was incredible. He showed up overweight, depressed, struggling in a relationship. He had a history of suicidality, and he was on a slew of medication, which is pretty standard. What I just described could be almost any veteran, almost any veteran. And, you know, he came feeling hopeless that he had been in treatment at the VA, which is the in the US, it's the government system that manages all care for all veterans. It's called the Veteran Administration, Veterans Administration. So he had been in treatment through the VA for I think 6 years. And he wasn't really getting any better. He wasn't seeing results. And he was basically on his last leg. And somebody mentioned the program as a pilot. That's when we were on the very, very first group. And he showed up and was like, I'm throwing everything at the wall. Like, can I get in this program? And over the course of time, you know, he learned how to express himself. He learned how to take responsibility and acknowledge what he was feeling. He learned how to identify emotions, period. Like, what is this emotion? How do I feel it in my body? Like, what does this mean? Where is it coming from? He learned how to understand perception. Like, this is how I perceived this event, that it was my fault, or that I could have done something differently, or that I was the one to blame, versus what actually happened in the event. The program is intense at times. You know, we ask you to face some of your most difficult memories. Your choice as to which memory you pull up, but, or we ask you to learn how to develop trust again in your fellow veterans, or, you know, to give yourself some compassion and some grace, or to how not to judge yourself. And he went through all of that. Anyway, by the end of the last program day, at graduation, he gave this incredible speech, and then basically told all of us that he had gotten off all of his medications. He had not, he after 6 months of this work, he didn't need medications at all anymore. And that he had asked his then girlfriend to marry him, so that they were then engaged at that point, and you know, announced that he was going to come back as a volunteer and start working with veterans moving forward. And again, Jason's story is incredible, and there's videos of him on my website as well, as kind of like testimonials to the program. But other things that I've seen, I remember there was one female veteran who we were outside and a rainstorm was rolling in, and we acknowledged that the rainstorm was coming. We paid attention to the weather. We identified what the weather patterns were, and then we had to make a decision. Okay, what are we going to do now that we know what's coming down the pike at us? Are we going to go back to our cars? Are we going to stay out here and build a shelter? What do we want to do? So, problem solving, critical thinking skills, taking responsibility. And we decided we were going to stay out there. And as we're building the shelter and the wind picks up and the weather starts to roll in, she walks over back over to the fire circle, and she stands on one of the logs, and the storm just fell upon us, and the wind kicked up. It's sideways rain, kind of like Captain Dan from Forrest Gump. And she stands on the log, and she puts her arms out to both sides of her, and she yells facing into the wind, like, I'm alive. Like, as loud as she can. And in that moment, that woman truly like absorbed the energy that was coming at her through this, and like rekindled herself back into existence. And she was completely changed from that day forward. It was incredible to watch that happen. And then the last experience I will share is one that really, I'll never forget this ever in all of my years, where we had a group where there was a mix between black and white folks. And there was a member of the group that came from an affluent family in the South, had kind of fallen to drug use, wound up here in the North, and was trying to like find himself, make some changes, become more humble. And then there was another man who was right here from the city of Rochester, a black man who'd also joined the group. He had been through same struggle with, you know, substance use. And they spent the whole 3 months together. And at the end of the 3 months, they decided for their graduation ceremony that they were going to have each member of they split themselves in half, group A and group B, and each member of group A was going to pick a member of group B to celebrate. And these two got paired. And it was time for the black man to celebrate the white guy. And he looked at him and he said, "You know, when you first came into this group, you were talking about how this was going to be a challenge for you and how you were struggling to accept your family and your background. And you said that you came from a family who built this country," I think he said. And then he followed that up and he goes, "Well, your family might have built this country, but your family built this on the backs of my family members. But despite all of that, I just want you to know that I see you and I appreciate the work that you've done here to find yourself. And I just want to honor that." And all of us that were leading the group were, I don't know if your podcast listeners can see me, but we were all just sitting there like holding our breaths with our mouths like wide open, like this could go really badly or really beautifully. And I was just like, and the words came out and I couldn't stop crying because I could not have scripted that even if I wanted to. I didn't see it coming and I was so grateful that it happened and I value that white man's humbleness and that black man's ability to confront that and do it in a way that was like compassionate and diplomatic. It was a beautiful moment of acceptance. The program does all kinds of stuff to people. It really does. There's magic that happens that I don't know how that occurs, but it does.
Wow. Where do I end? The passion, the energy, and the purpose that comes across, Lindsay, is honestly, it's phenomenal. And I think some of the listeners and the watchers here today will be getting so much from your stories. You're really identifying true. This is real. This is happening. This connection. And maybe we may never understand, but there's something about that connection. They're going back out into nature. They're part of nature. But this almost, I kind of, I don't know, I keep having this Venn diagram in my head of you that this outdoors education and veterans, it's all so meant to be and so purposeful. And there's this beautiful thing going on there that, and you're the connector that's bringing these, as you say, a difficult community that struggle to find their way through. And you're acting as a lightning rod, a catalyst to bring that together. And gosh, I feel very blessed that we've had this time for you to share some of this. And it's I hope our listeners, if they want to, they can dive in and find out more. But we're going to kind of move on and thank you so much for those
Thank
sharing
you.
stories.
Thank you.
What you resources, gosh, you must have so much. What do you have any resources you would recommend for our listeners and watchers today that they might go and access to find out a little bit more about some of the things you've been discussing?
So you can obviously I'll put a plug for my website. So there's video testimonials and there's other kind of like information, news articles, stuff like that, that would be helpful on my website. And my website is www.integrating-nature.com. You can find out more about me and the work that I do, and also contact me if I can help you in any way. But also, there's some books that I highly recommend. So I'm gonna stand up here so I can grab
Go
them.
for
But
it.
yeah. Okay, so just off the top of my head, really, I cannot say enough about Nevin Harper. Nevin Harper is a mentor and friend of mine and was really instrumental in helping me to get a lot of this work off the ground. He's
Okay.
given me so much of his time, and I'm so grateful to him. He wrote the book, which is literally called Nature-Based Therapy. He's out of Canada, and he does incredible work with children, youth, and families to create some healing and with nature-based therapy. So him, Catherine Rose, and David Segal together wrote this book, and I cannot recommend it enough. There's another book that was written by Martin Jordan and Joe Hines. It's called Ecotherapy, Theory, Research, and Practice. This is a really good one.
I've got that one on my bookshelf.
Do
It's
you? Yes. Okay, good.
I love hearing people's resources because I'm like, oh, that's a new one.
Yes.
No, I've got
Yes.
I could tell that landed with Anna Marie. Then I could see she was like, I've got it,
What else? Florence Williams, she wrote The Nature Fix. That's a really good book. And if you want to just understand why humans and nature are so closely bound, I mean, aside from the fact that, like, for the first 99% of our existence, we were nature-based creatures, she puts it in a way that's really pure. And then there's two other really great recommendations that aren't scientific or practice-based at all. They're actually just short, good, beautiful reads that I recommend anybody pick up. This book my mother gave me years ago, and I read this with my group members. It's called The Other Way to Listen by Bird Baylor and Peter Parnell. It's a children's book, but it can be used with adults, and I think it's like, I don't know, 20 pages long, and there's these beautiful illustrations, and it just teaches you about that understanding about how to listen and be. And the message is so simple and so clear and so powerful that if you've got like $14 and 20 minutes of time, this is it. So The Other
Excellent.
Way to Listen, very powerful book. And then the last book that I could recommend, which I have recommended to every student I've ever had, is it's called The Tracker, Tracker, The Tracker. And this book was a game changer for me. So in terms of wilderness survival and understanding the culture of how I teach, coyote mentoring is the term that we use. It's about teaching people how to learn not by giving them the answers to their questions, but by giving them more questions that will help them become critical thinkers. And it's tied in with this entire experience. I just want to go back and make sure that it's been so long. You guys familiar with a guy by the name of Tom Brown? No?
Nope.
Okay. So Tom Brown is a wilderness survival specialist that was trained accidentally in childhood by one of the last Apache trackers in existence. He found him because he would skip school. He would play what we call play hooky way back in the 70s, and he would run into the New Jersey Pine Barrens, and he would just spend his days tooling around there, and he came upon a kid who was his age, who was a native kid, and the native kid introduced Tom to his grandfather, Stalking Wolf. And Stalking Wolf took the two of them under his wing, and for the next 18 years taught them everything he knew about being an Apache tracker. And it's the whole story. It's a true story. And it's incredible. And it's how I learned how to teach outside. So that book as well.
Oh, that's
Just
brilliant.
all incredibly good resources that I think have been kind of like the cornerstones to all of this. Yeah. If you're looking for a certification in eco-psychology, not ecotherapy, but understanding the psychology behind everything that I'm speaking about, the Pacifica Graduate Institute does an online certification class, I think over the course of 3 months. And it's a certification in eco-psychology. Yeah.
Thank you.
Interesting.
Thank you so much. We
You're
are
welcome.
always really keen to build up a bit of a library for our listeners and watchers to dip into. So we will make sure that all of those resources are signposted on your profile page on the Coaching Outdoors website. So thank you for that.
Surely.
Wow, what a treat. massive heartfelt thank you for sharing your time and experience and insights. I know personally vets are a group that I really connect with, A, being a vet myself, and also having a lot of friends who are as well. And I've got a number who are bomb disposal, being logistics, bomb disposal, a part of that, and bomb disposal. Wow. I've got a couple who have really, really struggled with PTSD and continue to live with it. One who's still in, one who's out, and having conversations with the guy who is still in, how to support individuals transition. So actually it happens as you're leaving, so you're not a vet, it's a whole part. And actually,
yes, exactly,
therapy and coaching approach, because it's in place already. And actually then how can you bring coaching in, how can you bring nature and the outdoor space into it as well?
Wow.
And combine that with maybe some mentors who've lived the experience already. So who knows? I'm going to be sending him this episode to watch very much.
Yes, I would love to have a conversation. That came up, Anna Marie, it came up over and over and over again. And I can only speak for here in the States, but in the States, there really is no transition program. It's like, okay, you've been discharged. Here's like a class that you can take for 5 hours if you want to, and good luck. You know, there's no, here's other veterans, here's some peer support specialists, here is a program that you can think about. It just feels like you go from, and I've heard this over and over again, like you go from this intense feeling of camaraderie after having been through something so very serious to feeling isolated and alone and not okay with talking to anybody and not knowing if anybody understands your plight and not feeling safe in sharing that because it was ingrained into your brain over and over again that it's not okay to talk about mental health issues. So what are we leaving our service members with when they're done? What are we leaving them with? Yeah.
I'm going to be, yeah, we can talk offline.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Yeah.
Oh, amazing, amazing, amazing. Thank you so much. And watchers, listeners would love to hear your thoughts. What stands out for you? What has got your brain cells kind of whirring? And what is this conversation inspiring you to do moving forwards? You know, we love to hear your thoughts. We love feedback. Please reach out, whether that's through our LinkedIn community page, whether it's direct to any of us. Hopefully this is just the start of the conversation and how the ripples of this episode then get taken and put into practice. It's all part of that bigger picture of being in service. So Lindsay, thank you so much for your time, and thank you listeners and watchers for taking the time to listen in today. This is clearly one episode of many. If this is your first time listening, welcome, and please go back and check out some of our previous episodes. If you're not a member of our LinkedIn community, please do join. That's where you hear updates, and hopefully we have got some exciting things coming up for 2024, of which this is just the beginning in series 7. So thank you. And
thank you both so much for this opportunity. And listeners, thank you for sitting this long and listening to me talk.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Lindsay. It's been amazing.
Oh, good. Thank you.